This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of Greetings from Allentown. I am your host, Peter Winson. And this is a special episode. It's kind of in the spirit of the Pod Blast segments that you've been seeing on the Place to Be Nation feeds, talking about the WWE Greatest Wrestler Ever project that is ongoing, and some other subjects that Chad Campbell has taken a quick dive into in like 15 to 20 minute podcasts. This may run slightly longer than that, as I am prone to talking on and on, as you may know from listening to my regular shows. But today's show is involving an anniversary that is actually today, as of when this show is dropping. It's June 27th. And it was 30 years ago on this date that the first vignette aired on WWF television for the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, who within a year would be pushed to the world title level, even holding the world title for an oh-so-brief period of about a week before he was stripped of it by Jack Tunney, stating that you could not buy the championship, you had to win it in the ring. Ted's run would last for 6 years, with the final match at SummerSlam 1993 against Razor Ramon, and included several tag team title reigns alongside IRS as Money Inc. He main evented WrestleMania 4 and was in the co-main event at WrestleMania 9, and was in numerous memorable matches along the way. But that's the end. Let's rewind to the beginning for Ted DiBiase, who is the adopted son of Iron Mike DiBiase, who actually died in the ring in 1969, a death that is actually referenced in the 1974 film The Wrestler. In that movie, a wrestler dies in the ring at the hands of crippler Ray Stevens, and DiBiase was brought up as a cautionary example of how those things could happen. His birth mother, Ted's birth mother, Helen Nevins, was also a wrestler as well. Ted went to West Texas State, which was something of a factory for professional wrestlers who would play football also. It produced Terry and Dory Funk Jr., Tully Blanchard, Tito Santana, Stan Hansen, and a whole host of others. And Ted is just one in a very long line. You could create a wrestling all-star team and maybe even build an entire promotion just from guys who went to West Texas State. He played football there and dropped out to become a wrestler. He was trained by Terry and Dory Funk Jr. and did get his start in the Amarillo territory, starting out as a referee. And then he made his way over to Mid-South from 75 through 79, and briefly won the Missouri title at one point. He had a lot of success very early in his career, a sign that he had a very bright future ahead. In 1979, he jumped to the WWF, or the WWWF, whichever it was at that point in 1979, and was awarded the North American Championship, which he then lost to Pat Patterson. And eventually that evolved into the Intercontinental title. Sometimes Ted has been credited as being like an Intercontinental champion, but what he actually held was the North American title prior to the IC title being created. He then made his way down to Georgia Championship Wrestling and had a very memorable feud with the fabulous Freebirds that lasted a very long time and, in fact, crossed promotions as you got later into the 80s, with a memorable angle occurring in March of 1981 when he took four pile drivers from Terry Gordy, including one on the cement floor outside the ring. And he missed some time and made the big comeback there. But later in the year, he made his way back to Mid-South and would reign as the North American champion and would actually win it a second time in a very memorable match against the Junkyard Dog. Ted DiBiase was a squeaky clean babyface for much of his early career, and in that match against his friend, the Junkyard Dog, he used a loaded glove to knock out JYD and to capture the title. And he reigned as the top heel in Mid-South for quite a few years as the leader of the Rat Pack with Jim Duggan and Matt Bourne as a couple of his underlings. And they ran roughshod through Mid-South Wrestling for much of 1983 and into 84. Ted would turn babyface again in late 1985 with an angle coming out of a match that he had against traveling NWA World Champion Ric Flair, in which Dick Murdoch attacked Ted DiBiase, feeling that Murdoch felt that he should have gotten the title shot at Ric Flair. And DiBiase became a wildly over babyface for the rest of his time in Mid-South and then later the UWF. Although much of his success from at that point was as a tag team worker and not as much as a singles wrestler. He was teaming with Dr. Death Steve Williams in the United States and in the UWF Mid-South, but was also tagging with Stan Hansen in Japan, a opportunity that opened up when Bruiser Brody jumped ship and Hansen needed a partner, so he chose Ted DiBiase, and they won the 1985 Real World Tag League in All Japan Pro Wrestling. As 1986 passed and the calendar flipped to 1987, Ted DiBiase was a very strong babyface, but not tippy-top, despite Jim Duggan having left for the World Wrestling Federation in early 1987. The UWF was also facing financial difficulties brought on by the attempt to expand nationally and also pressures within their home base caused by economic slowdowns due to the oil industry slumping in a big way due to the oil glut in the United States in 1986. Because of these pressures, Bill Watts cashes out and sells his territory to Jim Crockett Promotions in early 1987. And what that does is it creates a situation where Ted DiBiase is now a LeBron James-style sought-after free agent. He would be a fit in Jim Crockett Promotions, as he had been in Georgia before. He could be a babyface to put up against Ric Flair and feud with the Nature Boy during the course of the year. But there was something in the background that was changing the game, as the World Wrestling Federation, of course, ran WrestleMania 3, and whatever the real attendance number was at the Pontiac Silverdome, it was a hell of a lot of people, and it garnered a lot of attention, and they loved to show that off. If you remember primetime wrestling, it would always have a pan shot of the crowd at WrestleMania 3 as part of the signature at the start of the show for many, many years afterwards, and it made an impression on everybody, and including one Paul Bosch, who was in a kind of working relationship. Houston Wrestling, which Paul Bosch controlled, was in a close relationship with Mid-South UWF, and he did not really want to work with Jim Crockett Promotions. So he saw the writing on the wall and made an agreement to work with the World Wrestling Federation. And as I said, Ted DiBiase is a free agent here in the spring of 1987. He's on UWF television and presented as a contender. And they had a top 10 rankings for the top contenders for the UWF title. And the number one and two contenders were to meet for that title shot. The number one contender was Dr. Death Steve Williams, and the number two contender was Ted DiBiase, his tag team partner. And DiBiase had played up the fact that he was not happy about being the number two contender, even though I guess it really wouldn't matter, since even if you were the number one contender, you would have to face the number two contender for the title shot anyway. But DiBiase, not happy about not being number one, and his free agency is all in the background of this. You have the WWF coming into Houston now, a territory where Ted was very, very popular. And it was time for the World Wrestling Federation and Vince McMahon to make their pitch to Ted DiBiase. Ted DiBiase seemed like a natural fit for Jim Crockett Promotions in 1987. And they certainly wanted him, as they offered good money. They were going to allow him to work Japan whenever he wanted. And it looked like it was fait accompli that DiBiase would be heading to Jim Crockett Promotions. Also, Ted DiBiase, long known as one of the better workers in the business, and Jim Crockett Promotions was more of a worker territory, while the WWF was more concerned with characters, over the outsized, outlandish, cartoonish even stuff. But the WWF made their pitch, and it was a very peculiar one, in that they were not going to tell him upon first visit what the gimmick was. And they would only tell DiBiase that if Vince McMahon were to set foot in the ring and become a wrestler himself, this is the gimmick that he would want. And the WWF wanted an agreement that Ted DiBiase was on board with them before they would tell him about the Million Dollar Man gimmick. And as the story was told by Bruce Pritchard on a Something to Wrestle With podcast on the topic of Ted DiBiase, Vince had Ted call Jim Crockett from a phone in his office and let him know that he would be turning down their offer and was heading to the World Wrestling Federation. There was one issue to be resolved here, and it's that Ted DiBiase had been a babyface for the better part of a year and a half, one of the most popular wrestlers in that area in which Mid-South and UWF reigned supreme, which included Houston, Texas. But the Million Dollar Man, that was designed for a heel. So there would have to be some way to turn him heel before you would introduce him to the WWF audience. They didn't just throw out the vignettes and say, here's Ted DiBiase, because they knew that he was very popular in Houston and the WWF was now controlling the wrestling television with the help of Paul Bosch in Houston. So what they did was they did an angle, local Houston angle only, to turn Ted DiBiase into a heel. And that is kind of the point of this episode. This was a video that was on YouTube, and it is now off of YouTube. It was pulled recently. But I'll guide you through this with audio clips and whatnot. And Ted made an appearance at the Sam Houston Coliseum on May 15th, 1987, right after signing, and addressed the fans and let them know that he was going to be wrestling with the WWF from now on.
Hello, Houston. You know, without a doubt, in my career as a professional wrestler, the people of Houston, Texas have received me better than any other fans, any other place. I feel that it's only fitting. I feel that it's only fitting that you be the first to know that in my effort to strive to be the best in my profession, to face the best competition in wrestling, I will now be wrestling with the World Wrestling Federation from this day forward.
Now that murmuring you hear in the background at the end of what DiBiase was saying is due to the one-man gang making his way to the ring for his scheduled match as DiBiase was talking. Now, of course, the Gang and DiBiase were rivals in the UWF earlier in 1987 when the Gang was the reigning champion and DiBiase was the babyface challenger. So the people there could kind of see what was happening, that maybe these guys who were rivals there will now be rivals in the WWF. And Ted would appear on Houston television in the upcoming weeks, cutting a promo, and he would have a match against the one-man gang at the beginning of June 1987 on an episode of Houston Wrestling.
Money! It's a gag.
This match against the One Man Gang, which took place on June 7th, is actually on Daily Motion. And you can search for it by typing in One Man Gang versus Ted DiBiase. And it would be either the first or the second result. It's so weird for a fan of the WWF who grew up in the Northeast like me, seeing DiBiase in this spot. This was not something, this heel turn in Houston, that was made public to other areas of the country. This was purely a local angle, kind of like how they would do for the Montreal market at times. And it's also strange seeing DiBiase outside of his normal gear, but in a WWF ring. He's wearing red here, he's working a very babyface style. And he was never a babyface in the WWF after the turn that took place in Houston. He's throwing drop kicks in there, and it's pretty amazing to see him do this stuff that you would never see him do again. He's also working with the one-man gang, a very large and slow man. In fact, I think he was a lot slower at that time as the one-man gang. When he became Akeem later in 88 and into 89, I think he got into slightly better shape, or at least he was trying a little bit harder, but he was not moving around too well, at least in my opinion, in this match. Paul Bosch is on color commentary for the bout, and he makes kind of an interesting comment, which I perceive as a shot at the now Jim Crockett-controlled UWF for not giving Ted greater consideration for perhaps putting him in the world title picture.
There are a lot of people who rate Ted DiBiase, although they don't give him the opportunity to win the title. They claim that he is among the top 10 in anybody's list of great wrestlers.
Ted then accepts a challenge from the gang for a test of strength. And DiBiase was always a much bigger guy, I think, than what he looked, which I know might sound like a weird thing to say, but he was 6'3", 6'4", 260 pounds, and that would help him in the WWF. Obviously, it was a big man territory for many years, and he was just big enough to be a viable challenger to Hulk Hogan. He comes out on the short end of the test of strength, but actually fights out of it, and then starts working the arm of the gang, who looks more than a little blown up in this match. The gang gets taken down to the mat, and the broadcast crew starts in with a promo for the Friday, June 26 show, which would be the return to the Sam Houston Coliseum. It should be headlined by Hulk Hogan's first appearance in Houston, taking on Kamala. And they're in this hammerlock for quite a while there. And eventually when they get up, Ted is sent to the corner and is slowly, very, very slowly, being the operative word, worked over. And then we get a bear hug by the gang as I put my palm to my face there. And Ted, it takes him a little bit to get out of it, and he, very innovative way, bites the gang's nose. So he gets out of the hold that way. And he gets a boot up in the corner on the gang, who was charging in for an avalanche. And DiBiase scores with an elbow to the top of the head from the second rope. Then a drop kick. And then he sends Gang for the ride again into the ropes and tries a second drop kick, which didn't look good at all because he went up for the drop kick even before the Gang hit the ropes, I think. That's how slow the one-man Gang was. Gang does then miss an elbow, and DiBiase takes this chance to go for the spinning toe hold, which was one of his, I guess, finishers of the time and would make appearances in his very, very early Million Dollar Man phase, but not too often. He would use the back elbow off the second rope, which you would see for many years in the opening to primetime wrestling. And the Million Dollar Dream didn't really come about until around WrestleMania 4. During the spinning toe hold, Gang counters by kicking DiBiase to the corner. Again, Ted actually tries a charge on the Gang in the corner at a point, and he gets a knee up on him, and the Gang goes for the pin and puts his feet up on the ropes and gets the 1-2-3 for the somewhat disputed victory. And Sam Houston rushes the ring, erstwhile babyface from Texas, also new to the WWF, always forever a plucky, undersized underdog, and really not the best fit for the WWF given his size. And I never really enjoyed Sam Houston as much as a lot of other people. I don't really see kind of the plucky baby face that everybody else sees. But he's there, and the girls are screaming for him, and he's disputing the call with DiBiase. And they eventually get Gang out of the ring with a double drop kick. And what that does is it sets up a match on the next show, June 26th, which would be a tag team match between Sam Houston and Ted DiBiase, joined forces once again as they had been a team briefly in the UWF, from time to time at least. And they'll be facing the duo of Outlaw Ron Bass and the One Man Gang. In the lead-up to the tag match, DiBiase and One Man Gang were facing each other on house shows exclusively in Texas, including one June 18th, 1987 in Odessa, Texas, where the One Man Gang defeated Ted DiBiase. And on that same card, the Dingo Warrior, not the Ultimate Warrior, the Dingo Warrior as he was known then, defeated Steve Lombardi. So paths are crossing. A lot of new faces are coming in to the WWF in that time period. DiBiase did pick up a win on June 25th in Jackson, Mississippi. It was the one match that they had outside of the state of Texas, but still within kind of the range of where the reach of Houston wrestling. So that would set up the next night at the Sam Houston Coliseum, which was a somewhat disappointing crowd of 4,236 for the big tag match between the One Man Gang and Ron Bass versus Ted DiBiase and Sam Houston. The footage of this tag match is very much clipped, so we do not have the whole match, and there is also no commentary, so it's just kind of like you're a spectator in the Sam Houston Coliseum watching this. And as we join the match in progress, Sam Houston is selling big for the Monster Heels. Ted is in the corner. Instead of wearing the red from his previous match that we saw in Houston, he's in black now, and oddly looks very disinterested looking on in the corner, just kind of leaning on the ropes with his forearms on the top rope. And Houston finally is able to tag out to DiBiase, who comes in a mild house of fire with a big back elbow on Ron Bass, and he has another one for the Gang standing on the apron, hits a drop kick on the Outlaw Ron Bass, and then despite only being in the ring for about 35 seconds, he tags out to Sam Houston, who had just been beaten down again, and instructs Sam to finish him off. And Ted has just decided that he wants Sam Houston to do the work here. Sam tries for a bulldog but gets thrown off by the bigger Ron Bass. And you can see Ted in the corner once again is completely carefree. Bass misses with an elbow, and Houston goes for the cover, gets two, then hits a drop kick, and a pin try, only gets one that time. Sam Houston then misses a drop kick, very similar to what DiBiase did in the previous match against the Gang that he had lost. And it's at this point that DiBiase just kind of walks into the ring. Ron Bass kind of retreats back to his own corner, and DiBiase picks up Sam Houston and just lays into him with a right hand. And you can hear a lot of the screams in the audience as he starts to do this. Now, Ted does not have the loaded glove that he made so famous in Mid-South earlier in the 1980s, but he's just laying in to Sam Houston with right hands here. And Houston just kind of, very uncomfortably for the viewer, starts grabbing the front of DiBiase's trunks and is pulling on it, like almost like he's going to pull down his trunks or something like that. But really, he's just suffering and in pain. And DiBiase throws Houston to the outside and sends young Sam Houston right into the ring post, and then delivers a body slam on the concrete. No blue mats for the Sam Houston Coliseum here. And then tosses Sam Houston back into the ring instead of just leaving him for dead to take the count out. And he leaves to a chorus of boos on that Friday night at Sam Houston Coliseum. And it would be the very next day that the Ted DiBiase vignettes would start airing on the Superstars of Wrestling. And it would start with the initial vignette where Ted is playing with his money and he gets an unfortunate paper cut while playing with his money. So he instructs Virgil, who is his driver of the luxury vehicle, to take him to the emergency room so that he can get immediate medical attention. And he goes in and says that he has a paper cut and requires immediate medical assistance and has to keep upping the ante for the woman at the desk, who finally agrees. And that is where the phrase is uttered on WWF television for the first time.
Everybody's got a price for the $1 million man.
There would be more vignettes, buying a table at a restaurant. My personal favorite is when he gets all the little kids kicked out of the public swimming pool so that he could just spend the day there by himself, because that was the moment that the Million Dollar Man crossed the line from regular everyday villainy into a kind of cartoonish supervillainy. And of course, there were more vignettes, live action vignettes, later on in the year with crowd demonstrations. A little boy has to dribble a basketball 10 times to get money. And it also memorably featured a younger Linda McMahon, yes, the head of the Small Business Administration, on all fours on the interview podium, barking like a dog at the urging of Ted DiBiase, and a very young Rob Van Dam kissing the feet of the Million Dollar Man. But that's the point where I'll leave you here, is at the creation of the Million Dollar Man 30 years ago today, June 27th, 1987, that first vignette airs on WWF programming. Thank you so much for listening, and do tune in on Thursdays on the Pro Wrestling Only feed for another episode of Greetings from Allentown. This week, we'll be taking a look at Wrestling Challenge, WWF Wrestling Challenge from July 11th, 1993, featuring, yes, the Lex Express begins in earnest with the Body Slam Challenge on board the USS Intrepid, Yokozuna and Lex Luger. Do tune in, won't you? Thank you so much for listening.